So happy to have with us now the offensive line coach for the Cleveland Browns, George Warhop. Coach, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me back.
Well, I'd like to talk about this group of yours because it's been an interesting season. And if you just focused on this aspect, that you're starting a rookie at right tackle in Mitchell Schwartz, that in itself could be an adventure for any offensive line coach to have a rookie in there from day one and playing straight through. But the fact is, through nine games, you don't hear a lot of conversation about Mitchell Schwartz, and I think it's because he's doing a pretty good job in there.
Yeah, Mitch does a nice job. He's smart. He's tough. He listens. He learns from past mistakes. He's fortunate to be in a good room. I mean, again, you got Joe, who's in there, who's played, who knows how to play the tackle position. You got Alex Mack, who played with him in college. You got Sean Laval, who is into his second year as a starter. So, you know, as a room, you know, as a community, I mean, we tend to do a decent job of communicating how we need to get things done.
Was it any concern of yours that he played, and I guess a bond maybe he shares with that he wouldn't prefer to share with Brandon Whedon, that first game against Philadelphia was a rough outing for him, and it seemed and for the whole team, but I mean in particular it seemed like it was for Mitch on that you know, going against that Eagles wide nine, so on and so forth. As you looked at it, were you concerned that a young man's psyche could be damaged from that and how he would come back? I'm sure as a coach you were monitoring that pretty closely.
Honestly, I don't ever think about that.
No?
No.
Okay.
I think every game's a different game. I mean, you look at Philly, that's a good front.
Yeah.
And even the best players are going to have issues at times with that front. So you go into it, you have a plan, you try to execute the plan, you look at how you went about executing the plan, what we need to do differently, and then you move on to the next week. But you don't dwell on that stuff. If it's not a great day, you fix what needs to be fixed and you move on.
Did he even indicate to you in the slightest that he was out of sorts after that, or did he just show you that immediate professional refocusing for Cincinnati in week two?
No, we talked about what we needed to do going forward. I mean, he did some things that we had to fix or some things we had to change or change his thought process about a few things. But, you know, one thing about Mitch, he's plugged in to what he does and how he does it, and it's not a hard conversation to have.
What are the greatest challenges that a rookie right tackle specifically faces? Give me kind of a list, and then if you as much as you can tell me how Mitch has dealt with them.
Well, I don't think it pertains to just a right tackle. I think it's either tackle, and the first issue is the quality of the player you're going to deal with down in and down out. You know, when you're playing against Philly and Cincinnati and Baltimore and this week Dallas, they have very athletic guys, very long guys that know how to use their hands, guys that know how to take advantage of your position if you're in the wrong spot. And so the biggest issue is becoming consistent in how you approach them and have an understanding of what you're going to allow them to try to do to you. And then you have to try to eliminate those things. And that's how we go about it. How can we minimize what they're trying to do? And then how do you counter that?
As a group, this line has given up only, and I know you want this number to be better, but it is only 14 sacks. And from a statistical projection, if you finish the year with 28 sacks, that would be the fewest the Browns have allowed since like 2008. So it's not too bad when you consider it in that regard. But what are your general thoughts on how the pass protection has gone, given that this is a pass-first football team?
First and foremost, you know, sacks, it's a group thing. It's an offensive deal. So if we've only allowed 14, it's because we've all O-line, quarterback, receivers, running backs, everybody's doing their job. So that's the first thing, is that we're all on the same page and we can minimize guys getting to the quarterback. In terms of the number, it's week to week. We like to have none.
Yeah, of course.
And so, and even on top of that, we don't want the quarterback hit. So that's our thought process going into the game. We don't want him hit. We don't want to allow a sack. We want him to play with a clean jersey. But for that to get done, as I said before, it's an offensive deal. Everybody has to do their part.
Is it harder to protect a rookie where you're still learning what Brandon, you know, his steps, his tendencies, the things that I guess he does that maybe are would be more second nature for a line that obviously a line that had been together. And I know this doesn't apply to Mitch so much, but you know, everybody this year, even Joe Thomas and so forth, the veterans are new to Brandon Whedon and what he does. Is that a factor in pass protection?
Yeah, it can be. But then it goes back to, you know, Whip and Brad and Pat and what they're telling him to do in terms of drops and the rhythm in which he's getting the ball out and all that. And they've done a great job of that. So it can be an issue. It has not been. And Brandon is he's, in my opinion now, in my dealings with him, okay, he embraces all that's going on. So he's not a hard guy to communicate with. If there is an issue, they tend to get it fixed pretty quickly.
George Warhop, offensive line coach for the Browns, joining us here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. You had an unfortunate situation occur at left guard with Jason Pinkston, and a scary deal, to say the least. Six games into it, he develops a blood clot that ends his season, and you go to John Greco to fill that left guard spot. But first, let's talk about Jason, the kind of year he was having, and what that, you know, that dilemma, what was created by him not being able to finish the year.
Well, you know, Pink was going into his second year, and you know, it's hard to talk about where he was and what was going on and whatnot, because we're six games in, and I thought when he got hurt, we were just starting to get into our rhythm a little bit, you know, figuring out who we were, what we want to be, having Trent, what's best with him, you know, protection-wise, what we were doing and how we want to approach things. So, you know, there were some growing pains, in my opinion, in general at the beginning of the year. And when he became ill was just when we were starting to hit our stride, I thought, or at least have a pretty good understanding of how we want to approach things and how we want to go about it. So I thought he had just played his best game.
Mm-hmm.
And then he were going in to play Cincinnati, and you know, I just thought he had, you know, a chest infection, you know, upper respiratory infection. And so I kind of felt bad because I was hard on him.
Yeah.
In the Cincinnati game, I was hard on him about not being able to play. And when you find out what it is, and when you know the kid, and you know he doesn't miss anything, you know, your heart really goes out to him, and you go out for him, because he'll fight till he's dead, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. in terms of playing. So when he could not play, and when he tells me on the sideline, he says, I can't play, you know, right then and there I knew, all right, this is bigger than just, you know, an upper respiratory issue.
Sure.
There's something else going on here. I didn't think it'd be to that degree.
Right.
But it was something that he himself couldn't overcome. So so it's very, very unfortunate. You know, he's around now. They won't let him come to the meetings or doing any of that, but he's in the building every day, and they're working through the process of getting him back.
That's great. And, you know, we want him to want all the best for him and to come back from this next year and many years beyond. In the meantime, John Greco steps into that position. How has the fit been with John in there? I know he's a veteran, and I know he's versatile. How has that worked out?
I think John's done a nice job. One thing about John, again, as with the whole group, they're all smart. They understand the expectation in terms of if you're up and you have to play, the expectation is for you to perform.
Mm-hmm.
And as I tell them all the time, when we put our team together, I don't care how you get here. If you make it, then you're one of the best five, you're one of the best seven, you're one of the best nine, you're one of the best 11, whatever your role is, okay, in our room. So if you're in the room and you have an opportunity to play, the expectation is for you to play at a high level. And John has done that.
Yeah, he just seems to be all business and all focus and step in and put his head down and do the job.
Correct.
Yeah. I mean,
and that's what he is, and he's smart. He likes playing football. He's embracing the opportunity. And, you know, this in the long run for him, it could open a whole bunch more doors for him.
Sure.
So, I mean, you got to embrace every snap you get.
When we look at the line as a whole with regard to run blocking, and having a guy like Trent Richardson back there, I know is a special thing for this team, and it just seems like he is getting his groove. He's dealt with his own health issues, but it's still, I guess, dealing with this rib problem, but the last couple of games getting 100-plus yards. How have you felt the line's role in run blocking has developed?
I've always felt we've been, since I've been here, a pretty good run team. It was a little bit of a shift philosophically in terms of we throw the ball more than we've done in the past. But I've always looked at our group as being a physical group, a group that has no fear in terms of getting after people. Sometimes it's just a matter of opportunity. And, of late, Trent's been getting the ball and he's been paying dividends. And I'm not going to take anything away from him. That kid can be as good as he chooses to be.
Sure.
We just got to continue to help him. And again, running the ball, as with sacks, it's a group effort. I mean, the receivers have to do a great job. If he's going to have a run greater than 7 or 8 yards, it's the receivers are involved in doing something downfield. The fact that, what we do in the passing game affects the force and eliminates force at times. So it's all tied together. And as we're starting to hit our stride, we know what we're doing in terms of with the quarterback and with the receivers and what we want to do up front and how it all ties together. The better groove we become, the better we'll be in all facets of what we're trying to do offensively.
And as you look at what you have, of course, with Joe Thomas, Alex Mack are those fixture guys. Sean Laval, a guy who essentially is kind of like a second-year player in reality in terms of experience, looks like he's getting a little more traction with what he's doing. Do you see a guy whose game's coming together a little better?
I love Sean Laval. Okay.
Why?
Because he's the toughest guy in America, in my opinion. He fights every down. He's starting to let his personality show a little bit more. He's got some unbelievable convictions about himself personally. I like the guy as a guy. I love the guy as a player, and just keep watching him.
Interesting. Well, we will keep watching this line and your work with it, and we appreciate you taking the time to join us.
I appreciate you having me. Thank you.
He is George Warhop, the offensive line coach for the Browns, joining us here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. We've got much more coming up on ESPN 850 WKNR.